on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Vibes are high. Got the good reading.
We know what to play in the next couple weeks here when we're on TV, because you let that play for an extra 5 to 10 seconds good. And we're dancing fairly aggressively. And that could be on television.
Brittany.
Yeah.
John Morosi, MLB Network Insider, on our Friday morning. How's it going, John?
Outstanding. Good morning from the great state of Michigan. Excited to have the Jays here this weekend. I'll be at the ball game on Sunday. I would normally be going down to watch Alek Manoah pitch tonight, but I've got to manage my daughter Elena's coach pitch game today. So Coach John has some obligations here. So I'll be tuning in like everyone else to watch Alek in his start later on.
Does coach pitch imply that John Morosi will be on the mound tonight?
Now, that's a great question. I would say that the very much by a wide margin most highly anticipated start tonight in Michigan is going to be in Detroit by Mr. Manoah.
Maybe not for me if you're on the boat.
I pitched one inning at the last game. I typically allow and encourage my other fellow coaches to hop on the mound, and I kind of just like to. I don't know. I like to be able to watch the swings and offer encouragement and do that. I did enlist my eldest daughter to keep the book, such as it was during the last game, which was exciting. I said, "Gabby, sweetheart, all you have to do." She said, I don't know baseball. I don't really watch baseball. That's okay. I just need you to be able to read off the names of who's batting. That's it. So that's your only job. And she said, begrudgingly, once I told her that she could have what we're called the Giants. So once you could have your own Giants hat, and you get to just speak really loudly for a while. She was on board with that, so that we were all set.
Is your slurve better than Jose Berrios's?
Jose Berrios last night was all-star level. My slurve is not at all on that level. His stuff has been trending in the right direction. So I think that is by the way, well done transition, and congrats on the hat trick this week as well. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
You're always listening, but, John. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was great. I was listening to the show, and I couldn't believe, Ailish, that you buried the lead that far in the show. Yeah, I scored a hat trick in ball hockey against, you know, in a tournament of a bunch of legends. But anyways, back to the Jays. What? I said, no. This needs to be earlier in the show, off the top of the show. Come on.
Well, right? We were with the Stanley Cup champ, and then we followed up with Olympic gold medalist. So I think I was third on the okay. rungs there. That's all right.
Fair enough.
So you got a big day in the state of Michigan from you and Alek Manoah. Is this the biggest game of the Blue Jays season tonight?
It feels that way, and I really think that, you know, that momentum can gather in a certain way, and getting a sweep last night was big. You know, that was tough travel from a standpoint of you now have to play a getaway day doubleheader. You win both games late. I know the White Sox aren't having the best season, but that was a really good test of the Jays yesterday, I thought. And they pull into a tie now with the Yankees. That's good. And so now it's all there for them. And we saw the reports of a pretty encouraging start at Double A. It seems to me that a lot of the things they were trying to address with him that they've had some success with. And at the end of the day, this is the only way to test it. Now, I will say, proud Michigander I am, that the Jays have, I think, rather, I think, wisely decided the opponent against whom he will make his return in terms of building confidence. This is not a team that possesses an especially deep lineup in any scenario. They don't have a lot of lefties in terms of power. Kerry Carpenter is the one at the moment. Riley Green is out. So this lineup is really well situated for him to have a confident outing. It just is. And I think that, to me, has to be part of the calculus here. Obviously, then you have Bassett starting on the final day of the first half. I think there were a lot of reasons why this made sense. But, and the Jays are never going to say it, but I do think that if they were ending the first half with the Texas Rangers in Texas, we might not see him on the mound tonight. But I think that the opponent, the venue, good place to pitch. You'll have half of Windsor there to support him. I think it's a good situation for Alek to come back.
Okay, so that's part of the strategy. It's a lesser lineup, but if he's around, and if he's around every fifth day, he's not going to be sheltered forever here. So is this just an opportunity to see in a lower leverage, it's an important game, against a lesser lineup, where you can make a decision after that? Is this a permanent thing if he shows himself to be major league ready, at least for one night? Like, what do you think the next steps are? What do you think the consequences might be if things go wrong? Like, what's the next step based on, you know, the good and the bad scenario? The good scenario being, yeah, he pitches well, and the bad being, okay, he gets shelled again. Like, in those two scenarios, does it deliver the same result, or does everything hinge on performance tonight?
Yeah, no, it's a really important question, Justin. I think he's back to stay, and I hesitate to use the words for good, because there's always obviously a chance that he could go back down if there needs to be an adjustment to what we see tonight. But I don't think the Jays would have brought him up with the idea that this is just a one game look. This to me is because they believe that he has checked off a number of the important milestones, and I think too, you are trying to build his confidence, and we all have to take a step back and realize that every day that goes by that he's not in the big leagues is a hard day for him, because he's someone that thrives on that presence and the confidence that comes with being a major league pitcher. I mean, not for nothing, at this time a year ago he was an all-star. So I do think that this, just if he's able to end the first half as a major league pitcher and have that be his identity as he goes into the break, that's going to mean something for him. I really believe that, for all that he's gone through the ups and downs this first half. So I believe that this move was made with the idea of him being a permanent member of the rotation. The other thing I would say is that in terms of the rest given to the rest of the rotation, in terms of days of rest in between starts, you know, having a locked-in fifth starter, if that's how we're looking at him now, it'll, I believe, help you get a better version of Kikuchi, because you'll more often be able to get him an extra day of rest. As it is now, you're very rarely able to schedule in more rest, because you're trying to, in this way, every available starter makes every available start, and then you use the bullpen game when you have to. That's a hard way to go about things. There's a reason why, I don't know, the last time that we saw a team that was going with a four-man rotation for an extended period of time make the playoffs. It just doesn't happen very often. And so I think that getting a better Manoah will get you a better version of the other four starters too, and as opposed to having to rely on a bullpen game and compromising the bullpen, et cetera. So for me, this is tonight about him, for a lot of us that are watching this game, but there's also something in this for everybody else, and that is that the better he pitches, the better rested, I believe, the rest of the Jays rotation is going to be in the second half.
Yeah, Jeff Blair was on us yesterday, and mentioned that there might have been some pressure from the starting rotation itself to get this guy back, because they might have been running out of gas just a little bit, or needing that fifth starter and not being able to run a four-man rotation. Like, it just was not going to set up well for after the All-Star break, and that might be part of the reason why Manoah is back when he is. It wasn't just like, hey, go away for a month. It wasn't just like, hey, go rest for a month. Go kick your feet up. It was, hey, let's work. Let's find something. Let's make improvements. Did we learn anything about the absence? Did we learn about something he was doing wrong? Did we learn about something that was mechanical that wasn't working? Do we know what might be different, or what they were working on in the lead up to tonight?
Yeah, it's a really important question, Justin. And I think the interesting part of it is they were purposefully a little bit vague about exactly what went into Alex changes and what he had to do in Dunedin. I'd be curious just to see how much Alec himself will reveal after the start tonight about what changed in his routine. Everything from on the field, off the field. Again, how much he'll share is certainly his prerogative, but I would imagine that we're all going to be curious about what changes were made. And I think that, and you can both probably appreciate this, we all can, as just as humans, when you get a shock to your system on this level like he went through when he was sent down after struggling to that extent, you start as a person to say, okay, well, what flotation device can I cling to right now that will keep me afloat here? What do I know to be part of my identity and what I'm doing and who I am? And I think that there was probably a fairly detailed assessment of what that looked like in terms of his routine. And I would imagine they've got tremendous high-performance coaches there that I'm sure can work on the mental side of the game as well and how you process that shock to your system and get back on the mound. I'd be surprised if that wasn't part of the comeback, because I think that is such a standard part, and it should be, of athletes and care and maintenance these days. So I think that to me is a really interesting part of what we see in him on the mound. Does the delivery look different? To me, this is one of those great cases where we're just going to have to watch. We're going to have to observe tonight just to see how he looks. And you could look at maybe the split screen of how he looked in April and May to what he's looking like now. I do think that we're going to have to observe for ourselves and then hear what he has to say in terms of what he's willing to share about what changes he made, because I imagine that there were a lot of changes off the field just in terms of his preparation and getting ready for a start, because this is one of those things where failure can sometimes be a blessing in its own way, that it forces you to reevaluate a lot of things that make you better in the end, and that might be a part of the story tonight. And the fun part about sports and the fun part about life is that we're not going to know until we all have a chance to watch him pitch tonight.
Yeah, all eyes on Alek Manoah tonight, and he's a confident guy, and he's got to come in with a lot of confidence that he has found what he needed to in his month off from the big leagues, and we're looking forward to seeing that. I'm talking to John Morosi, MLB Network Insider. So you posted a story last night, 12:30 a.m., just grinding away, John, why the Angels are unlikely to trade Ohtani. Now, the Angels in general are in a bit of a tough spot, as we know, but a good topic to discuss nonetheless about just, I guess, the future of Ohtani and how it seemed like things were trending one way, but maybe not anymore.
Right. Ailish, it's been an amazing story for the Angels this year, because to your point, they had a pretty solid start. If you look back just 15 games ago, they were in a playoff spot, fourth best record in the American League, and now, my goodness, it's all changed. Trout is on the IL. Even Ohtani had a blister in his last start. They've gone 4-11 in those 15 games, which is the worst record in the AL over that span. And now the questions are being asked. What does it mean for Ohtani's immediate future? And I spoke with a number of people around the industry yesterday and trying to divine exactly what the Angels are doing at the moment. And the belief is that it would still be a pretty significant surprise to see him dealt this month. The Angels have not come out in the last couple of days and again explicitly said he's not going anywhere. Perry Minasian, their GM, said last month in fairly strong terms, I mean, he didn't necessarily rule it out entirely, that Shohei would likely not be dealt this month unless things totally unravel. Things are close to totally unraveling, but the point that I made in the column is that this is not just a normal, quote-unquote, normal superstar situation like Yu Darvish or Manny Machado in recent years when the Dodgers traded for both of them when they were rental players. Shohei is different. Shohei's got a chance to hit. Right now he's on pace for 56 home runs. And so if you're the Angels and you need some positivity here as an organization, there are reasons to keep him beyond just maximizing your asset or trying to make the playoffs this year. I think that if you trade him, you lose any chance you had of signing him long term. If you trade him and then he goes on to hit 60 home runs in someone else's uniform, what's that going to look like for everybody in an Angels organization? I mean, how empty would that feeling be? So in a vacuum, you probably would trade him, but this is not a vacuum. This is Shohei Ohtani, and I think that given where he's at right now, all that he's meant to the organization, Ailish, I have a hard time imagining, and a lot of people in the industry have a hard time imagining that he's going to be dealt. And yet, I would also point out that the organization is not come out definitively in the last 48 hours and said, yeah, just to confirm, he's still not going anywhere. We haven't heard that yet. So if they lose 10 in a row, maybe we reevaluate a little bit, but I would still be very surprised if he's in a different uniform by August 1st.
Let's go from one AL MVP to another. The Toronto Blue Jays pulled even with the New York Yankees, who got just stomped by the Baltimore Orioles last night. And Aaron Judge, of course, has been dealing with this issue. There's a lot of different reporting. It seems like there's a different news nugget every day with regard to that toe injury. What's actually going on with Aaron Judge? And are we talking about, like, not just this season, but it affecting him for multiple years in his career? What's going on with Aaron Judge?
Well, it is the most closely watched toe in American sports right now, and that we know for sure. But you're right; there have been different indications that this could affect him beyond the end of this year, and obviously, I am not the doctor in our household. That would be my wife, and so maybe I'll try to get her on the phone to think about that before the segment's over. But I think right now with Judge, I spoke with a source yesterday who said that in the midst of all the gloomy prognostications, that there is at least a positive trend line here, that they believe that he'll come back probably at some point in time in the next month and make an impact on the Yankees in the second half. Does that mean that he's immediately back to being the player that he was? No one knows that for sure at the moment, especially when it is your big toe and you, as one of the strongest humans to play the game of baseball, create more torque and force than just about anybody else when you're batting. What does that do to the kinetic chain? How does that impact your toe? If you have a torn ligament there still and it's not necessarily going to get fixed anytime in the immediate term, it's an open question. There's a ton of uncertainty right now for the Yankees. And that's where, as the Jays look at this division, the Orioles are way better now than they were a year ago. We saw that again last night with their emphatic defeat of the Yankees. But I think that the Yankees are a lesser team now than they were a year ago. They just are, for a number of reasons. And Judge and the question about his availability is part of it. Again, I tend to think, and there's no timetable on this yet, but I was told that there are positive trends and that there's a lot of optimism that he's going to come back at some point in the next month. Don't know when exactly, but that was what I was told yesterday. So I would say we'll look for him to return, but how well he hits, how powerful that swing will be off of a still wounded big toe, those are a lot of questions right now that we just don't have the answers to.
Chatting with John Morosi, our MLB Network insider. Okay, so a couple days away from the All-Star break, from the Home Run Derby. I assume you don't take a break at all because you never stop working. But what's your favorite part of this upcoming stretch where it's a little bit different in the baseball world?
Sure. No, it's a great question. I love that it is the time of the North American sports calendar when we really devote a lot of attention to baseball. Baseball has the stage to itself for a period of time. NFL training camps haven't opened yet. It's sort of our time as a sport to shine. Great city, obviously, hosting it in Seattle. It's going to be special, I think, to see Julio Rodriguez in the Home Run Derby. I'm glad that George Kirby and Julio were added to the All-Star roster, in addition to Luis Castillo. So I think you'll see a real, really strong vibe overall in Seattle. I like the draft as part of it now from a standpoint of the marketing. The futures game has become, I think, an even more important spectacle in recent years as well. So I think MLB, the way they've organized the All-Star Week, they've done a great job of making it into a really big event. And I'm excited for everybody to have that experience in Seattle. To have maybe all the Mariner legends there. I'll say this: very few cities and very few sports communities have as many legends as Seattle does. When you think about Griffey and Ichiro and Edgar, I mean, this is a franchise that has had some pretty big, really big stars over time. Felix Hernandez as well. So I'm excited. It's going to be a great event. Beautiful weather usually in Seattle this time of year. A lot of Canadian fans hopefully coming down from the lower mainland, which will be special. So it should be a great spectacle all the way around.
Does Vladdy get the home run crown or what? Or the chain, actually. I saw it's a chain. It's nice.
Yeah, the chain. I love it. I think that for me, my pick, I'm going to go with Randy Arozarena this year. I just think that Randy is one of these players who just loves the big stage. And no matter what he's doing, he is, whether it's the World Baseball Classic, postseason, he loves moments like this. So I've got Randy Arozarena as the Home Run Derby champion for 2023.
All right, we'll let it be. We'll let it be. Looking hopefully that Vladdy gets, maybe he finds something and can continue getting some home runs and maybe some here when he comes back at Rogers Center. We'll pitch well tonight. We'll be looking for your line on the books, maybe over or under 3Ks. That seems high, but you win.
No K's, Alex. It's my goal. I hope for Alec that he has the Alec has many more strikeouts than I do.
I like that
tonight. I'm just trying to, and you know, it's like there's pressure in there. Like you gotta get it in the zone. Mm-hmm. Like, and I've been fortunate so far. Let's hope I keep it going. That at least in the innings that I've created, there have been no strikeout plus crying combinations that I've been responsible for. That is what you never want to have happen on your watch. I mean, last year on the team, the dad who was coaching the team, there were a couple times that he struck out his own daughter and she cried, and that's just like, that's the worst. You don't want to see that. So that will be my goal for Elena, to not be struck out by dad tonight.
Okay, we'll make sure we're cheering that on as well. I appreciate you coming on this morning, John. We'll chat with you next week. Thanks.
All the best. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
John Morosi, MLB Network insider and pitcher in his daughter's little league. I didn't really get to that, but whatever league it is.
Pitch coach. You know things have gone poorly in Michigan if John Morosi winds up with more strikeouts than Alec Manoah tonight.
That's exactly. We need to parlay
two different diamonds.
Morosi
in a rough.
Under strikeouts, Manoah over strikeouts. That's your Wake and Rake today.
And we might have to discuss Randy Arozarena in the Wake and Rake a little bit right now. I'm seeing plus 1,000 for John Morosi's pick to win the home run derby.
Put just that in thought, there for the end of the show.
Just a thought. It is. It's marked down.
It is. John Morosi knows best. Okay. I don't know if you've seen, like, let's do something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
This Philip Zadina.
It's a sitch.
Situation. Former sixth overall draft pick to Detroit in 2018 has done something you don't see very often. He's 23 years old. He cleared waivers this week, was put on unconditional waivers for a mutual contract termination. He has 2 seasons remaining on his 3-year contract and has decided that he's going to forego getting paid to go into unrestricted free agency and give up $4.56 million in salary the next 2 seasons to bet on himself to get an even bigger payday, to get out of Detroit. As a young kid with a lot of money that you can just grab in the next 2 years, it is very unprecedented. You don't see that often.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I kind of respect the move because, I mean, I think it's foolish. I'll be honest. This guy has 28 goals and 68 points in 190 NHL games, former sixth overall pick 5 years ago, has played in parts of 5 seasons, has basically done nothing in the National Hockey League, but makes close to $5 million, what you said, 4.6?
Yep, he's going to miss out on $4.56 million.
It's really hard to make $4.5 million in the NHL nowadays. Like, you have to be, I don't know, but like maybe the top third of the league, at least, maybe 25% actually gets paid that much money. It's a lot of money for a guy who's done, as I mentioned, nothing in the NHL. But I guess he figures he's got more to offer. He's got more opportunity. He doesn't like being a part of Steve Yzerman and Derek Lalonde's system, I suppose. Like, this is a pretty big move for a guy who's definitely not going to be playing for more than $4.5 million next year. But if he thinks he's got more to prove, if he just wants a bigger role, if he just doesn't like the situation he's in, well, I guess he's getting himself out of it. Sometimes it's not all about money.
That's correct. Apparently, there's already some teams looking to acquire his services, so sounds like he's
Leafs?
At least chatted with somebody. His
Take
agent.
A flyer, Leafs?
Well, for how much money? They don't have much money floating around here.
They got a couple $1 million deals.
You just told me how much he's a bust, so I'm not really fired up about that.
But again, it's the context. It's what you're paid. That's the NHL nowadays. At 4.5, this is a disaster. At 1, it's maybe a good bounce-back bet.
I'm trying to think of the last bet on yourself. Maybe not even bet on yourself, just like fresh.
Fred Van Vliet.
Well, that's different. This guy was 6th overall draft pick. Fred Van Vliet was not drafted.
Yeah.
We will talk to... Ooh. good segue to tee up our guest at the end of the show. We will chat with Ron Baker, who played 4 years at Wichita State with Fred VanVleet, all 4 years together, was in the Elite Eight, also made the Final Four. We can get the, what was Fred like as a college kid? Did he always know that he was going to sign a $130 million deal as an NBA player? He also has a unique relationship with newest Raptor Grady Dick, who grew up in Wichita, used to train with Baker when he was a kid, and then Grady Dick mentioned him in his introductory press conference about how much he influenced him. So perfect. Just Daniele uncovers these gems.
Eureka moment from Daniele.
Boom. Let's get this guy on the show.
He's on the show the next day.
Ron Amazing. Baker at 8:30 joining us. Buck Martinez at 8 o'clock. As we mentioned, he was the manager of the Blue Jays when Roy Halladay was demoted to the minors, eventually returned to the big leagues. Similar storyline going on in Michigan tonight with Alec Manoah. And we'll take a break because we got Vivek Jacob joining us, Raptors.com and CBC Sports. He was in attendance for the Jakob Poeltl and McDaniels press conference yesterday. We'll go through that, the first slash second slash third impressions of Jakob Poeltl and the newest faces of the Toronto Raptors, and what's going on at Wimbledon, because there's a couple Canadians that made it three yesterday. Do they have a chance?
And just quickly, mm-hmm. 4.5 for Zadina over 2 years.
Yeah, I said that.
Okay, sorry, I was saying four. I was saying
not
on a
every
per year,
year
basis.
No.
I was like, there's no
He's
chance.
He's foregoing that in the next two seasons.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
Thanks for clarifying. Okay, Vivek Jacob next.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan Morning Show. Wow, that was timed. That's not going to be good for the podcast audience, but that's okay.
Oh,
I did not
good.
Mean to do that. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Fan Morning Show, Justin and Ailish. Fun times with John Morosi. Big night for Alec Manoah. Tarot cards are looking fondly on the big Puma. We shall see what happens in what we are calling the biggest Blue Jays start
ever
of the season. But let's pivot to the Raptors and maybe a little tennis because Wimbledon's ongoing. Ooh. And bring in our next guest, Vivek Jacob, writer for Raptors.com and CBC Sports. Good morning, Vivek.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
What's up, Big V?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Okay.
I got Wimbledon on.
Go to
I
life.
Got no complaints.
Yeah.
I like when Big V gets the tennis going and it's a big event.
And he's up at our hours.
He's tweeting. Yeah, he's tweeting when we're up. It's just, there's something
there's
comforting
another human
about that.
Out there.
Yeah. So you were in attendance for the Poeltl and McDaniels press conferences on Thursday. Poeltl, of course, sticking around on a 4-year deal worth $20 million. Did you learn anything about Jakob Poeltl yesterday?
I learned that he has a lot of confidence in this team, even without Fred VanVleet. How much Fred entered into his own free agency and what that kind of process looked like. And he mentioned that he kind of go and forth with Fred and looking at the different options. And obviously just went ahead and signed with the Raptors anyway. And I thought, personally, I would have waited to see what was happening and then maybe gone elsewhere. But it shows the faith that he has in this team, even with Fred out of the mix. And we'll see what it looks like with Schroeder coming in and obviously McDaniels as well. But it's hard not to see the Raptors being slightly worse without Fred.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard to spin that. I was going to ask you if the order of go mattered, because mm-hmm. if you're watching it in real time, that fateful Friday night, I guess it was a week ago today, Poeltl gets that deal done, not immediately, but the Poeltl deal gets done shortly after 6, and we're waiting for Fred VanVleet, and it happens, I don't know if it was an hour after, but a couple minutes after, for sure, there was some time and space between it. Obviously, these things are connected, but again, Poeltl going ahead anyway and signing this deal. Did the order of go matter, or everyone knows what's going on at that point, and it was just Poeltl making the decision that he wanted to be with his team?
Yeah, I think he's a pretty straightforward guy. He kind of likes a lot of simplicity in his life, so I'm not surprised that he just wanted to avoid any kind of complication. And I think, again, he just saw this as the best fit for him. Obviously, he also had 80 million reasons to do it, and that helps. But I think I think he just liked the fit. And I think obviously he's got a great relationship with Pascal Siakam. We'll see what happens there. But I think for now, he seems sold on what the Raptors have going on going forward. And, you know, I guess it's one of those situations too, where it's like, hey, if this is the most money you're getting, you take it now and you worry about whatever comes later.
Is 80 million reasons the right amount of money to be giving Jakob Poeltl when you try to evaluate the next 4 years?
I think the way the NBA salaries are headed, they're going to continue to increase. Obviously, we're going to see the spike that we saw in 2016 that brought over Kevin Durant to the Golden State Warriors, but they have agreed to a cap smoothing, so it's going to be a 10% increase each year. So I think this deal will look better and better over time. The question, of course, now is what the team will look like in a couple of years. But I think for now, that deal makes a lot of sense for someone who, you know, he's somewhere in that conversation of being a top 10 center in the league.
Okay, so you mentioned it, the realities of Fred leaving. It's almost impossible to say that they're going to be better next year than they were this following year, which was an immense disappointment and not progression in any sense of the word. But I do wonder about, you know, how hard the Raptors actually pushed. Is there reason to worry or to question how much they really were committed to bringing him back? I mean, they would have had to spend into the luxury tax to do so. I think if all things were equal, they would have wanted to. But the latest report, or one of the latest reports on the move, was that, yeah, Fred got that third year from Houston, or the option for a third year from Houston. And Toronto was like, okay, we can't do better than that. Not that there's like a silver lining here, but if you're thinking, hey, this team does have to regroup, maybe this is the best thing. But in their hearts, do maybe Masai and Bobby believe that's the best thing and they can make moves that are a little bit more geared towards tearing down and rebuilding something that is not just the remnants of 2019?
Yeah, I think in their hearts, there was an amount they just weren't willing to go past. I don't think this is necessarily where they wanted to be. At the trade deadline, they that could bring back all of Jakob Poeltl, Trent Jr., and Fred VanVleet. And obviously, they were successful with Poeltl. Gary opted in, and they missed out on Fred. And so I don't think this is the ideal scenario. I think they were trying to kick down the line and make some decisions later, or have these guys committed to contracts where then you at least have more leverage in trade talks and you're able to recoup some assets if things go the other way. Now, you know, at best, you're looking at working out some kind of sign and trade where you get something back from Houston, but you're not going to get as much as you would in a regular trade. And so I definitely think they fumbled the bag on that one. I don't think they saw the Houston Rockets as a significant threat around the trade deadline. And, you know, coming in, everyone was focused on the Rockets going after James Harden. And so obviously that didn't pan out. So I think that was a misread on their part. And now they have to rebound. Situation has changed and they have to find a way to move on from here.
V, wherever you're standing currently, don't move a muscle because we are coming in and out of service, but just stand, don't move, don't breathe.
Okay.
Just stand still. It sounded good. We were like, should we connect? We should reconnect. It's all good. So Fred out the door, and they've had a replacement lined up right away, I guess, within an hour of Fred leaving. Dennis Schroeder signs. What's the replacement of him? Obviously, I think it's pretty easily stated that he's not going to be as good as Fred VanVleet, but someone that we're going to learn a little bit about. And what can you tell us about him?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I'd say is he's a pretty solid defender. I think we saw that in the playoffs as well. He has a solid reputation on that end of the floor. I think he is maybe a bit more of a floor general than Fred. And I think the big loss is the three-point shooting. You're not going to expect, you know, those crazy nights from Fred where, you know, he's hitting 6-7 threes in a game. So I think that's where you probably feel the biggest loss. But I think Schroeder is a solid player at the mid-level exception. I think it's decent money to spend on him. And again, it's a short-term contract, so you're going to see what happens. And I don't expect him to start. I think the starting lineup, as presented with the roster as is, will be, you know, Scotty Barnes, Gary Trent Jr., OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, and Jakob Poeltl. And then Schroeder comes in to lead that bench unit. And so I think that's a role he's perfectly capable of and suited for.
So tonight, the Toronto Raptors make their summer league campaign official, their debut tonight, and that means Grady Dick will have his opportunity to make his Raptors legacy start. What do we look for in a summer league debut from a rookie? Obviously, like what his expectations will be this season, and if we are going to see Victor Wembanyama also make his debut later tonight, I think a little bit of a different anticipation level, but Raptors get to see their young pick in his first opportunity in the jersey.
Yeah, I think, you know, the big thing with Summer League is all the young guys get plenty of freedom. And so I think you're going to see Grady Dick with an opportunity to get lots of shots up and really, you know, work at whatever he's trying to work at to get to prove he's at the NBA level. And then we'll get to see some of his defensive acumen as well. The reports from the people who have watched him growing up and in college seem to be that, you know, he's a solid team defender, but, you know, the on-ball stuff is what needs work. And so those are the types of things that we're going to be able to see. And then obviously part of why you can't take too much away from Summer League is once you come to training camp and the preseason and the regular season, that's when, you know, your role kind of gets carved out. And so Summer League is where everyone's kind of free and has a real opportunity to showcase what they can do. Yeah, look forward to plenty of threes going up from Grady Dick.
Maybe plenty of TikToks as well. What do you make of just his young, vibrant energy, very Gen Z young kid that's going to be bringing maybe some positive energy to this locker room that's been questioned as of late?
Yeah, he's going to get along great with Scotty Barnes, that's for sure. I think they've already hit it off, and I think those are the changes that this team has been looking for ever since they fired Nick Nurse, and just completely looking to reset the vibes and change things up. And so I think his growing personality and, you know, even as a teammate, his coach Bill Self, and he said that, you know, Grady is the type of guy that will always be there for his teammates, is always uplifting. And, you know, in a down moment, he doesn't, you know, take it too casually, but he knows how to kind of lighten the mood and, you know, make sure guys aren't too themselves.
Don't move a muscle, V. You're fading again for a second there. We're going to try to power through. Okay, so Pascal Siakam. Of course, there's a little smoke there. I don't know how much the fire is actually burning. I don't know if there's actually really a suitor out there that can satisfy any of the needs of Masai Ujiri and company. But the discussion is the discussion, and when there is smoke, generally there is fire. What do you make of all the reports post Fred's decision about Pascal's potential future exit?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of back and forth going on. I think when you look at the report that initially came out that Pascal Siakam would not sign an extension with any team that he was traded to, I think that was a leverage play on his part, maybe hearing some of the trade rumors and saying, hey, you know, I get a pretty big extension if I stay in Toronto. I've been in Toronto this whole time, and this is where I want to be. And so maybe he's fighting against that a little bit. And I think the Raptors are just doing their due diligence and knowing that, you know, with Fred gone, maybe there is an easier pivot if they can get the right offer for Pascal Siakam. And, you know, obviously that's a big extension coming in. And if you're not really willing to go there, now is the time. Now is the time to get value for him. Obviously, he's a two-time All-NBA, and I think he is someone that would be highly coveted by a lot of teams. And so it's just a question of, you know, creating that bidding war to get a serious return for him.
So when Nick Nurse stepped out the door, we kind of thought that maybe he wouldn't be Team Canada's head coach for Canada basketball, but now it's official. Was that inevitable to you, or did you think there'd be a way to keep that relationship even though he was out of Canada?
You know, I really hoped that there was a way to at least maintain it through the FIBA World Cup, and then maybe you look beyond that. I think that's the disappointing part, the fact that you've got this huge tournament in a month and a half, and you could have maybe made it through this summer and then figured things out from there. I would have liked to see him coach here because he's been a part of this journey the last few years. He's been a huge part of getting the commitments for the 3 years since Tokyo. And so I think I would have liked to see him coach here, and then you look for a new one. We'll see, you know, how quickly Jordy Fernandez can get them in line and get the commitments again the rest of the way here. And who knows, maybe there's some guys who weren't willing to commit who would be great additions to the team that now, you know, look at a different coach and say, hey, I want to be a part of this now.
Vivek Jacob of Raptors.com and CBC Sports on the line with us now. Okay, let's shift gears to Wimbledon just a little bit. Good or bad, positive or negative, what is the biggest story in Canadian tennis right now?
The biggest story in Canadian tennis, I mean, I think it has to be Milos Raonic for now because of the comments he made after his loss, and that might be the last time he'd be at Wimbledon. We'll have to wait for official confirmation. Obviously, he's had an incredible career to have reached a Grand Slam final. And I think at least he gets to go out on his own terms. I'm sure that's what he's been working towards these last couple of years, as opposed to just, you know, completely fading into the back and just saying goodbye from afar. I think to at least be able to be out on the court is a positive. But you know, I think when you look at the likes of Denis Shapovalov and Felix Auger-Aliassime and Bianca Andreescu and Leila Fernandez, they can all talk about how much of an inspiration that Milos has been. And so I think that is for sure the biggest story. The thing that maybe, you know, is coming up on us is that Denis Shapovalov, with the way the draw has broken, has a real shot at the quarterfinals. You know, Casper Ruud was in his section. Casper Ruud, the four seed, is out. And then you look at Taylor Fritz being out of the way as well. So I think he's got a potential shot at the quarterfinals here. And obviously, that would be a nice return for him, return to form.
Yeah, Shapo and Bianca both victorious yesterday. On the women's side, a tough loss for Layla. That was a really hard-fought battle. I love watching her play. She's a joy, but she's out. But how does Bianca's future look in this tournament? Does she have a good draw for the next round?
Yeah, I think it's sort of one match at a time with Bianca, just because she's still, I think, getting familiar with grass courts and her movement on it. I think she has the style for it. I think, you know, when I think of her, I think of Ons Jabeur, and Ons Jabeur is someone who mixes it up a ton. And I think Bianca is in that sort of same vein. And I think it's just a question of really, you know, coming to understand the grass courts and getting comfortable with her movement on the grass. And, you know, I think when you have that movement in the bag, it's such a huge advantage. I think, you know, even on the men's side, when Andy Murray talks about, hey, the only person that's got more experience than me here is Novak Djokovic. And that experience on grass specifically is so huge. And that's where I think Bianca just hasn't had enough matches on grass in particular. But, you know, when she's playing her best, I still have a lot of faith in her. I think both Bianca and Layla, I think their main issue right now is they're down in the rankings. Obviously, Layla far below Bianca currently, but they're so far down in the rankings that they keep getting these tough matchups early in tournaments. And so it's just tough. And so the biggest thing for them is working their way up the rankings where they can maybe get a bit more of a favorable draw. And, you know, hopefully we can see them in the second week of a Grand Slam.
What's your concern level when it comes to Felix?
It's pretty high. I'm not going to lie. You look at the way last year ended, to win three tournaments in a row, to lead Canada to its first Davis Cup and look so impressive. There was the Laver Cup where he beat Novak Djokovic. Everything was looking up for him. And so for this season to go as it's gone, obviously very disappointing results in the Grand Slams. He's been a bit unlucky with, you know, he had the sickness and the injury at the French Open, but overall, you know, this has been a bit of a reset for him, and you know, hopefully there's some lessons for him to take. But at the same time, there are players right at the start of the year, you know, he was saying that, hey, I put myself in a position to be, you know, in the top eight, to have these high seeds, to get these first round, second round, third round matchups against players that I'm supposed to beat, but he hasn't beaten them. And so my concern level is definitely high at the moment.
I was just going to say.
We both want to talk so badly.
State of Canadian tennis with us. Yeah.
We're fighting over you.
These guys are, and guys and girls, reminder how young they are. Like Felix turning 23 this summer. Layla's still very, very young. Even Bianca, very, very young, despite how accomplished she is already. But yeah, a bit of an interesting time in Canadian tennis. Hopefully this summer can age well. Big V. You've been aging well for quite some time here. And this interview has aged well as well because your phone line seems to be perfect. But we got to let you go. It was fun chatting, fun catching up. And I like when we can double dip, hit a couple sports with you. So thanks for coming on. Let's do this again soon.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
That's Vivek Jacob of Raptors.com and CBC Sports.
Chapo's third round, 10 a.m. I hope there's no more rain delays because Neil in Newfoundland has been struggling to get the picks in because he's like considering all factors. And
he's got other things going on.
Chapo is at 10 a.m.
He did nail the Tommy Paul pick, unfortunately, over Milos Raonic. Just barely, though. I think the spread was 3.5, and it was a 4-game, if you want to call it that, victory over Milos Raonic. Who, yeah, might be
saying
goodbye.
That was a good story for a little bit.
I got to be honest. He exited my consciousness for a while. I did not expect the retirement tour for Milos Raonic, but if it was the end, at least he got back to Wimbledon. That's very, very cool.
Bianca is set to start at 7:55 a.m., which is in 42 seconds.
There you go.
We'll see if it starts on time.
That would be imminent.
42 seconds. Get your bets in.
Honestly, it's one of the, like, we complain about, like, hockey games starting on time or, like, 7:10 or whatever.
A tennis game is, a match has never started on time.
I cannot follow when tennis matches are supposed to start. I just turn on the TV, and if there's something on, someone who interests me, I'll watch it, but like it's hard to keep track of when these games are starting or these matches are starting.
So sometime soon it should start. Bianca in her third round, and of course we've got her second round, and then Chapo in his third round today. So the Canadians still some opportunity to make some wave here at Wimbledon. We've got Buck Martinez joining us after the break, former MLB catcher and manager and current Sportsnet analyst, had some time with Roy Halladay when he was demoted to the minors, made his return to the big leagues. And he went on to have a Hall of Fame career. So is that what we're seeing tonight with Alek Manoah? Let's spin the story as much as we can. Buck
More
Martinez.
Positivity.
And then Ron Baker will wrap up our Friday and our final morning show for the next 2 weeks. As we mentioned, we're off to the Drive Home show for the next 2 weeks. So you can catch us next week from 5 to 7 p.m. and the week after 3 to 5 p.m. We will make sure we remind you one more time, and then you'll have our guys, Brent Gunning and Sam McKee, filling in for the next 2 weeks in the morning while we get some rest and come back refreshed in a couple weeks. Our buddy, Buck Martinez, after the break.